Terry Wallace, always get a spring in my step when Terry walks into the house. Welcome to you, Terry. Great to have you in.
Yeah, good on you, Dwayne, and nice to have a live mic. Going up to Wangaratta on Sunday to call that one. Looking forward to that. It's amazing, this, even though it's this time of year, there's always stuff to talk about still. And you sort of say, I come in with notes. Well, I have. I've got a heap of things that I want to speak about. But sometimes it's you and your listeners, and particularly in that first hour, that get my juices flowing as well about what we're going to sort of speak about. And I sort of got the antennas up a little bit in your discussions that you had on earlier today about how important is winning in pre-season. And I think you're absolutely spot on in the fact that it seems more important for some than what it necessarily does for others. And I think that that's a realism.
Yeah, well, my ears were sparked up by Tim this morning. I mean, I was enthusiastic heading into last night's game to broadcast it because I wanted to see what Essendon threw up. And you raised a good point when you walked in here off air about Essendon's season starts.
Oh, look, they've stunk it up the last couple of years. So, I mean, I've been really interested. I think that they have been the least organised of any club. And I'm saying any club in the competition over the last 2 years at the start of the seasons. I mean, I went up to GWS last year, and I know it's a difficult spot to win, but they were non-competitive. They lost by 75 points. Their start of the year last year was awful. The start of the year before was even worse. I think Bombers supporters will tell us they were 1-5 and their season was virtually over very, very early in the piece. So they've got to get away. They've got to show, number one, that they're much more structured and organised than what they were previously. And, so to me, I was looking at them with some interest. I know both sides had a lot out, but they just looked better and better structured and better balanced. Now, as a coach, when I was coaching, I always thought there were three things that I tried to get out of preseason. And the fourth one we'll get to, which is the winning and losing aspect of it. Mm. But the three things were, I wanted to go into the game and think that the things that we had been working on, our way of playing, the Richmond way of playing, the Bulldogs way of playing when I was coaching there, that what we'd worked on over that period of time, you could see a semblance of that starting to really take shape, and that you could tick off, you might have still had some things that you needed to bevel the edges, but you could tick off that patch of it. The second one was clear. No injuries. Mm. Every club wants to go in, get their game done, get away with it without an injury. And my third was always to find a couple, to have a couple of players that I went into the game going, I'm not sure, can they step up to the mark? And you walk away, and I heard you sort of saying, we know what we're going to get out of the high-end Essendon players.
Shiel and Devin Smith, we know what we're going to get out of them. And we know Zach Merritt's a star, won the BNF and most votes in the Brownlow last year, but
so the coaching staff were looking for that next generation.
The Irving Mosquito.
Yeah. Can they do it? Can they make a little bit of ground to sort of say, okay, I'm ready to go. Mm. A Ham who played well last night.
Did.
I would think that the Essendon match committee would go, well, we're trusting of him now. Mm. So now whether he gets in round one, whether he doesn't get in round one, but we are trusting of him. If we want to go with him and somebody else is only semi-ready, we'd rather go with the match-hardened bloke than the other. And that would be my other point. So they're the three things I think that you look for. And then the winning aspect of it we'll go back to and talk about in a second. But the other aspect that I think comes into pre-season, but I also think it actually marches into the first 3 weeks of a season, is intent or personnel. Which is more important? The intent of the way that you're going about playing your footy or the personnel. Now, we've seen in the practice matches, those with intent win. That doesn't matter who they're playing against. If they're playing against better sides, worse sides, if they've got the right intent, they'll get the result. But I think that actually leaks into the first 3 weeks. And if you think about when you're doing tipping in the first 3 weeks, how difficult it is to get it right. Everything takes about a month to sort of settle itself down a little bit. Because I don't think personnel actually drives the early rounds. I think intent drives the early rounds more. So if I had my way and if I was on a match committee nowadays, I would tell our match committee, don't get sucked in for names. If the bloke's a little bit underdone, don't play him. Play him a week in the VFL. Give him another round to get himself absolutely right. Make him work his way back into the side and go with a bloke that's done everything, that's trying to prove a point, that's going to virtually, you know, in football terms, kill himself to get the job done, to stay in the side and to actually try to help you get a result. I think you're better off going with them in the first few weeks.
Yeah.
Then it settles down. Then you need your better players up and running. So in those first three matches when we get into it, the senior sides, and I'll go Geelong, who were awful, right, does their intent get right back to where it needs to be? And that's where it's hard to tip, because you're sitting there going, okay, well, we know We know St Kilda's, you know, looks like they're playing with intent. We know the Gold Coast are going to come out with intent. We know Port Adelaide, and no, Gold Coast and Port Adelaide playing each other, but we know they're out there with intent. What we don't know is, of the senior sides, can they just flick the light switch in round one and go, no, this is round one, our intent's right up there. Now, some sides we see do it, and other sides we just don't see are not quite ready, and they get bowled over in the first few weeks.
Yeah, I reckon Geelong fans would want something a little bit more out of their team against the Bombers in Colac heading into round one, because they play the Giants away in round one.
So, tough round one game.
So it'd be a dangerous thing for Geelong to think they can just flick the switch if they lose to Essendon and lose, you know, by three or four goals or lose badly.
Correct.
And then flick the switch against the Giants the week after, who are coming off their grand final loss. The other thing I liked out of last night's game is Ben Rutten looked like he had the eyes of the players on him. And John Worsfold, this transition phase, you know, how much he lets Ben Rutten coach in the early rounds of the season, we're not sure yet. But he virtually let Ben Rutten have the full say last night.
Yeah, well, in all due respect, I mean, and I'm more on John's side. I think the role that he's played and in the levelness of getting Essendon Football Club rebalance and back to stable, I think it's a big tick for what John's done for the footy club. But I'll go back to saying, I don't think they've been that organised. Now, they've put some different staff in, including Ben in the major role.
Blake Carosella.
Clearly Blake Carosella. I'm really interested to sort of see how much that tightens them up as a playing group. So, so tick for me for John on the role of senior coach and getting the Essendon Football Club back stable. Absolute tick. But they still are a fair way behind, well, have been a fair way behind, structurally, a few of the better clubs.
Terry Wallace is with me. We're going to take some more of your calls after we take a break. Terry's got a top 10 that I'm looking forward to him throwing at you. And we've got a few things to give away to the best callers in Terry's hour as well. 1-300-736-736. Got a few things to give away, including some AFL record season guides for 2020, the Footy Lovers Bible, available at newsagents and major bookstores. And thanks to Karcher, whatever the cleaning task, we have the solution. Terry Wallace is with us. So a few season guides. Tonight's game, by the way, is officially a sellout. The AFL has just announced that Marvel Stadium doors will be locked. It is a sellout tonight for the Vicks v. the All-Stars. We'll talk plenty about that with Terry Wallace as well. You at Dwayne's World. Great to have you with us. Terry Wallace and I in the studio with a McCafe coffee catch-up. Try the new spicy McChicken range only at Macca's. Choose wisely and test your tongue. 1-300-736-736. If you'd like to join us, that's the open line for Werribee Kia, Australia's number one selling Kia dealer. Heaps of stuff to give away. Just jump on the line, 1-300-736-736, like if you have on the Speckle text, 0433 98 11 16. Terry's about to give us the top 10 things he's looking forward to tonight. There's a few coming through on the Speckle text, but we'd love to take a couple of your calls. Afternoon, boys, looking forward to seeing some great skills, one-on-ones, but really looking forward to the midfield battle. Huge names going toe-to-toe, can't wait. Go the Vicks. Cheers, Glenn. Looking forward to seeing one-on-one contest. Martin v. Fife would be awesome. Rob from Parkdale. Take a few of your calls. Terry, your top 10, if you can.
Okay, so I haven't put in things like the one-on-one. So obviously game style for me, I would love it to be more pure and traditional, and the intensity levels, which we've spoken about for the last two or 3 weeks. I'm hoping that that's a given, that they are more as we would like to sort of see.
Mm.
I've gone more the things that are going to go on the ground. So I've started off with, and they're not in any order at all. Number one, watching anyone trying to go head-to-head with either Fife or Martin. Good luck. Whoever gets Nat Fife, yep. whoever gets Dusty, I still think that they're the best two players in the competition yep. as we stand right at the moment. And we'll get arguments off the SMS about who is, you know, who's better and, and potentially, yeah. Look.
Well, if Dustin Martin starts forward, someone is going to have to man him up.
Correct.
I presume you're not going to just going to have a zone defence where no one's really accountable. Someone is actually going to have to be accountable.
And how did he go in the prelim final and then grand final? Every time he went forward, he was devastated.
Yeah.
So that's my first. My second was watching the Indigenous Allies spark players. So Charlie Cameron, Michael Walters, and Brad Hill.
And Eddie Betts now.
Eddie Betts now as well. So they're the four boys, I should say.
Mm.
Just I want to see them light up the game, and I think that they've got the potential to absolutely do that. They could be, those four players, could be the difference between the two sides in some ways.
Yeah, interestingly enough, before Port Adelaide won their flag, I think it was fairly famously said by Mark Williams to the Indigenous players,
I can remember this.
Don't go and stand in the shadows. Let's put some bright boots on and let's be bold and let's let everybody know who you are. Show yourself. Get out there and put the light on. And exactly what they did that day.
Exactly. So I'm really looking forward to that. My next one is I've always had a fascination in state games of teammates at some stage going head-to-head. That's always been the way. Now, I picked the sides today in the paper and it had Blitzars playing on Hawkins.
Yep.
I reckon that would be great.
That would be great.
Well, it's like brothers in the backyard.
Mm.
You know, you always go, you don't want to give up anything. It doesn't matter whether you're the little brother or whatever. You just don't want to give up anything against someone you know that much and someone you know you're going to cop it off if it doesn't go your way.
So there
could be a potential of others along the way as well, sort of lining up on each other. But I'm going to watch that with a little bit of interest as well. My fourth one is seeing young guns like Gresham, Papley and Mills showing that they more than belong at the level. So that they're not just, the young guys there. They'll fill the interchange bench and we'll throw them on for a few minutes. I want to see those guys shine.
Which is what Boomer Harvey did all those years ago,
correct.
Isn't it?
Well, and who is he? He is the mentor, has been the mentor for Gresham the whole way through. Mm. I mean, he grew up playing with his dad and has done work with him. So I want to see those young boys just all of a sudden,
I'm talking to Boomer Harvey, I think, years ago. And Robert Harvey as well.
Yeah.
Are you talking Robert? Boomer. Okay.
Boomer played with Jade Gresham's dad.
Really?
And
right
from a young age, from about
13
years of age, he's mentored him the whole way through. So there might be a little bit of history repeating itself there. My number five is to see the six Giants stars back on the big stage after their grand final humiliation to show exactly how much talent is in that squad. I think they are superstars of the game. I still think we underrate, Canelio and how much importance he would have been to them fitting well. Whitfield and how much importance he would have been to them fitting well. And just to add to a little bit of that, I want a little bit of Toby torment in there as well.
You think he should aggravate one of his teammates?
I don't care who he aggravates, so long as he's in there.
Toby Green, aggravation, I like it.
Tormenting at his best. Number six. Seeing players like McRae and Higgins showing why they are still underrated in this competition. Mm. Now, Higgins is, to me, an absolute superstar. If he was playing at Collingwood or one of the huge clubs, Richmond, I think he would be so much more rated than what he is where he's playing at the moment. McRae, I was pleased finally that he got that All-Australian that he'd missed over a period of time. Never won a Best and Fairest up until last year, never All-Australian, but super, super, super consistent. So I want to see those boys against what is considered the very, very best to actually step up and show why they're still underrated. Number seven, I'm hoping that we get a Bont versus Cripps regular matchup. They played each other twice last year. I was at both the games.
Yeah.
They're one all. They are one. And they're still got.
Nice.
People think that.
So if they line up in the centre square for the opening bounce, would you like to see them stand side by side?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Size, body, everything, and let them go head to head at it. And as much as what people sort of say about the Bont and Green, I know they're on the same side this time, but Toby Green and the aggro there. You have more about the pride factor of beating the top players in the competition. These two blokes, as I said, head to head, Cripps did a number on Bont. the first time that they played. Absolutely did a number, and Carlton won the game. Bont went back and sat on his toes the next time around and turned it around. The Bulldogs won the game. So they've got unfinished business. So I want to see those two going head-to-head. As I said, you might have your own that you're really looking forward to seeing. Number eight for me is that one of the key big forwards winds back the clock and has a night out, catches everything, kicks six, so that we actually get, you know, the power forward playing like we'd love to see the power forwards. If I had a guess on one, I'd go Jeremy Cameron. He'd be my one that I think, you know, could kick his five or six goals in the game. So that's another thing that I'm looking forward to. Number nine, speed thrills. The run and carry from Johannesson and Saad. I think it's a spectacular part of our game when those blokes just start tucking the ball under their arm and dodging and weaving through and setting up, you know, runs of plays. You might put Lachie Whitfield in that group as well. But, yeah, that run and just taking the game on is my number nine that I'm looking forward to. And my last one, my final one, number 10, is that age does not weary them. We have Betts, 33, Stephen Martin, 33, Pendles, 29, Tomahawk, 32 Pendles, I should say, 31 Tomahawk, 31 Hooley, Jack Rewalt, 31, Goldie, 31, Boak, 31, Edwards, 31, Isaac Smith, 31. Age does not weary these guys. They will step up and show that they're as good as anyone going around in the competition. So they're the ones I'm looking for. You might be looking at matchups. You might be looking at which team performs the best. You tell us what you are looking forward to in tonight's game.
1-300-736-736. Over to your calls. That's Terry's top 10 that he's looking forward to tonight. Got heaps to give away. Some passes to the Melodic Rock Fest coming back to Melbourne, Australia for the second time, March 6th, 7th and 8th, featuring Firehouse, Reckless Love and a whole heap of other superstar acts at the Melodic Rock Fest. All-day socks by Underworks to give away, so comfy you'll chuck all your other socks out. I thought it was going to be old Chuck Up or the Terry Wallace inclination of that. $50 voucher to the Village Bell Hotel. Grab your mates and head down to the Village Bell Hotel this weekend, St Kilda's pub, Barclay Street, end of Ackland Street in St Kilda. 1-300-736-736, your top 10 or your number one that you're looking forward to tonight. Take your call straight after the break. Terry Wallace is with us. That number, 1-300-736-736. And Terry Wallace is with me. We're taking your calls. Let's go to your calls, 1-300-736-736. Heaps to give away. What are you looking forward to most tonight? Should be a ripper. A few coming through on the speckled text, but we'll head to the phones. 1-300-736-736. Plough, I'd love to see the Bont clean up Toby Green. I don't think you can get reported for cleaning up your own player. Thanks for that, Russell. And another one coming through. Looking forward to seeing Cripps, Bont, and those other young stars. Maybe number one for tonight, clear out the forward line and have a Pagan Paddock-style Fife and Cripps isolated. Do you think players will be staying in their positions tonight at all? Do you think you'll get congestion or do you reckon they'll stay out?
I think it'll be better than what it is in the home and away, but their natural instincts of playing the way that they've played for the last 3 or 4 years, I think it'll still play a part in the game.
I'm looking forward to seeing an ego get bruised or two tonight because I like the response. When your ego gets bruised, when someone else gets a clearance on you or tackles you and you tried the don't argue and all of a sudden you get beaten by somebody who is on your level as a player, I'm looking forward to seeing what the response is going to be from a couple of players because a couple of efforts earlier are going to let us know what the tenor is for the rest of the game.
Well, they're nearly all stars of the game. And they're not all going to play well.
No, that's a good point.
You're going to have some, you're going to have some best on the grounders, but you're going to have some that really just don't step up to the mark.
There's no medal being given out tonight, though, is there?
I wouldn't think so. No.
There is a best on ground medal. Okay.
Who's favourite?
I should find that out. I'll find that out. Why has Ablett been ignored from Brian? He should be playing. He's the best player of his generation. Spoke about this a couple of days ago. Why is Ablett not in there? Then he justifies being picked. He's been the greatest player some people have seen ever. And he keeps getting ignored every time someone pulls out. Someone else comes in ahead of him.
Yeah, well, that is a bit surprising, isn't it? Because he did, I think Paddy Dangerfield was the one who sort of said that, you know, he would like to play. And that was sort of put out in the marketplace, but never got selected for whatever reason.
1-300-736-736. Take a couple of your calls. Terry Wallace is with us. Should be a big game tonight. If you haven't heard, it is a sellout at Marvel Stadium tonight. Another one coming through on the speckle text suggesting it should have been at the MCG. I reckon if the AFL thought they were going to get 70,000, they would have maybe played it at the MCG. But they own Marvel Stadium, so it kind of makes sense. And a sellout's going to be good for
it's
visual.
It's a good feel, isn't it? I mean, yeah. When you get an absolute packed capacity crowd, and anyone that's been there when you start to get that 50,000 and just marginally above, it's got a great atmosphere to it.
Absolutely, it has. And full house, we don't often get full houses at Marvel, so tonight should be rocking. Can't wait to broadcast that myself, get down there and see what unfolds. So the centre square starting fours, do you think it's Goldstein, Dangerfield, Pendlebury, Cochin?
No.
Do you want Dusty in there, do you?
No.
Sloan? Who else? Who else do you want?
I want Bond.
You want the Bond in there?
No, I want Bond in there. I just 100%. If you look at those, I mean, that one real big body, yep. I mean, yeah, Danger's a reasonably...
So the Bond and Cripps head-to-head is what you're after. Yeah, so Grundy, Cripps...
The other four, I think, pick themselves.
Yeah.
Grundy, Cripps, Fife and Lockie Neal, yep. I think, picks itself. But I would go the Bond and I'd start both Dusty and Dangerfield forward.
Looking forward to teammates going through one another. Grundy bump on Pendlebury, for example.
Good. It's great.
Oh, we do hope we don't get any injuries, but I don't think there'll be much bumping. I don't think players will actually bump. I think they'll tackle ferociously. I think there'll be some hard tackles, but I don't think anybody will be lining up to bump anybody.
No, well, I'm of that vintage that you go all the way back to the Andy Collins and Tony Hall incident, the MCG. I know it was a quagmire, at that particular time, but that was just devastating for both players. I mean, it took Andy Collins a long while to get over, the injury that he put on to one of his teammates as well.
Of course, Women's T20 World Cup final MCG, and cricket being on at the MCG wouldn't allow it to be used, obviously, even though they could have scheduled the game maybe for a night when they could get it ready. Obviously, tonight wouldn't have been that night. So there's a few coming through on that bent as well. It's not available, so that's why the AFL couldn't use it. But as we've said, the visual of having a full house, a sold-out sign at Marvel Stadium is pretty good for the game as well, and they wouldn't want to damage the wicket, obviously, for the Women's World Cup. They'll be the last thing that after.
Absolutely. I mean, they want that 100% pristine. If you're going to try to set a record there as well with 90-odd thousand people being there, you want the pitch to be doing everything right.
Coaching styles, what do you think John Longmire and Damien Hardwick will do? Do you think they'll set guys up? Do they have a chat to each other about one-on-ones? Or
I would have thought they would have had a conversation, just a basic conversation about how are we playing this, how do you want to play it, how do we want to play it, just have that sort of conversation and then go back to their groups, and sort of shake hands and, now we're playing it. I think that they will undercoach rather than overcoach. I think that they'll just be, look, basic structures, this is the way we're trying to work, go and play and go and enjoy yourselves.
A few coming through as well saying that I think Luke Hodge and Nick Riewoldt are voting for the medal tonight as well.
I think that's great. I mean, a couple not that far out of the game that have been absolute stars. Yeah, if it had been played 3 or 4 years ago, I mean, both of those would have been walk-up starts.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think does the result matter or not? Does the result itself, I know the intensity matters, but do you think the result, because it's not SA and it's not WA, it's still an All-Stars?
I don't think the result matters. I don't think people will be walking away devastated.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the big V support that's going to be, I mean, if you're watching at home, I mean, there'll be people that'll be, obviously, from the other states, barracking for the Allies, but at the ground, I mean, it's going to be 100% Victorian support.
Yeah.
And I think people will be disappointed if they don't get a result, but I don't think they'll be, not shattered like your own team not getting a result.
But at the one-on-ones, you're going to be, the individual, you don't want your individual beaten, I suppose, is where I'm headed with that.
Oh, no, 100%. You know, if you've got one of your stars, think about the pub talk. Cripps is better than Bonampelli or Dangerfield. Oh, come on, Dangerfield's the best midfielder in the competition. All that goes online, all the water cooler talk, all the pub talk. Well, your boy's now got to stand up and show that he's exactly what you said he is.
So the five-person panel voting on the medal, Luke Hodge, Nick Riewoldt. So Luke working for Channel 7, Nick working for Fox. Tonight, Hutto's calling the game with BT, which is great. And Bruce McAvaney and Eddie Maguire doing the hosting. Ray Gallagher, the president of the Omeo District Football and Netball League, is also voting. So big night for Ray.
Yeah, on that, I think that that's good. I mean, that involvement, that's what it's all there for, isn't it?
Tim Wybush, the chief officer of the Victorian State Emergency Service as well. And the fifth person is you. So I talked about this a couple of weeks ago about the fan involvement. So Google has allowed, and the AFL is allowing fans to actually vote in their 3, 2, and 1. So you do get a chance to have a vote, which is nice. I'm pretty happy about that fan involvement. I thought they'd have more fan involvement. I thought the fans might be able to pick the captain and let us see whose fans are more potent when it comes to texting in Collingwood v Richmond. But Trent Cotchin ended up getting the nod as captain over Scott Pendlebury. Do you know how they ended up formulating that decision?
No, I don't. No, I saw the announcement. I saw Damien Hardwick announcing it, as most people would have seen on their TVs. But how that come to play, I got no idea. But look, I think that most people sat there and sort of said, you might have been arguing one way or another, but you would have been absolutely, completely comfortable with either of the two.
A packed out Marvel Stadium, much better than a half full MCG anyway. St Kilda feeling at Marvel. Not sure what that best atmosphere at St Kilda must have filled Marvel at some stage. That's what that texter is going. Someone's going to get a big injury tonight. That would suck the life out of the place if somebody did get an injury tonight. There's so much goodwill and so much excitement about it, but if someone does go down early, it will suck the life out of the game and maybe suck the life out of the enthusiasm level.
Would it put a big dampener on future games?
I think so.
If somebody's hurt tonight?
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's always the risk. And, I mean, if we are looking towards, maybe state of origin, well, you've got to expect that somewhere along the line that somebody's going to get hurt in one of those games, as they'll get hurt in the practice games.
Yeah, but a major, a cork thigh, okay, we'll accept that. Or a broken nose, okay, you can recover from that. Yep. It's not so bad. But a major knee injury, Tony Hall style, would be something that everybody fears.
Because, I mean, you've got all the best. So if you get an injury tonight, it's one of your best four players, virtually.
Absolutely. What did you make of the concussion story this week, by the way, before we take a break for news?
Oh, well, I think it's been one of those stories that's been growing underground for a long period of time, and there's a lot of players that are questioning themselves about, is this issue that I've got, and I'm talking about people of our vintage, I mean, I'm a bit older than you, Dwayne, but people of our vintage sort of saying, are some of these little issues that I've had ongoing, are they just the fact of age, or are they just a quirk of myself?
Or is that just the fact that I had 15 beers after the game every Saturday night?
Yeah, or is it a fact of getting belted somewhere along the line? And I think most people in that situation, and I heard John Platten talking about it, he hasn't got the answers. He doesn't know.
No, I believe John Platten. You know Greg Williams. You know John Platten. I know these guys. They're legit guys to me. When they say they've got, brain degeneration issues in their mind, then, I'm convinced about it. But we talked about it on the show the other day. There is this risk and reward situation. And I think that the situation with, you're looking at an F1 driver, you can become a millionaire, but you might lose your life driving F1. And I think AFL's got kind of the same risk and reward thing that you weigh up. Now, people, obviously, on my program the other day said that we've got more understanding now of the risk with head injury for CTE. But I think we, as kids, even back in our generation, Terry, knew that the risk was you could get seriously injured. Now, CTE might not have been part of the vernacular back then, but you knew that if you got knocked around, I mean, boxers were getting knocked around and you think, gee, I'm glad I don't box back in those days. Everybody always has known there's a risk with playing AFL, and the degenerative brain issue from getting head knocks was something that we knew about, even though there was no CTE.
Yeah, well, we had a player back in the 1970s who broke his neck and become a quadriplegic. We, we had players even back in those days. You know, Paul Callery comes to mind. He used to wear the headgear all the time. Gary Wilson wearing the headgear because they'd had ongoing knocks and ongoing concussion. So it's always been there. It's interesting. From a generational point of view, Dwayne, I think that our generation got more head-high knocks, but this generation get knocked far more often. So because the packs now and the intensity around the contest, so you are involved in far more collisions now than what you ever were back in our day. They might have been a little bit sort of above the shoulder back in our day and a little bit more leniency given, you know, just a free kick. That's all that needed to happen.
If you could make out you're going for the ball, even though the fullback was always trying to smack you in the head.
Correct. Correct. So one generation got more unnecessary head-high hits. This generation are just copping it more often.
Pete on the road. Welcome to you, Pete.
Guys, love the discussion. Absolutely brilliant. Look, every time we talk about state games, and we're looking forward to this one, but every time we've talked about it in the past, and if the thing that killed it was this obsession or fear-related obsession with regard to injuries. And you guys are just mentioning it yourselves, you know, how would you feel if there was a serious injury done, you know, in the opening quarter or, you know, the opening part of the game? Well, how should we feel when a serious injury is done in a, you know, pre-season warm-up exercise like at Hawthorn last year?
Tommy Mitchell,
losing their best player or how should we feel when that happens, you know, in any other game? Should we then stop the AFL season altogether? I think this, you know, this obsession with that and where it's likely to occur creates this fear, which is more likely to, you know, to bring things undone than work for you, to be honest.
I think that's a reasonable call. Oh, I think that you you summed that up pretty well. I still think that there is this, the other games, well, your preparation has to be done to get yourself ready. Your practice games have to be done to get yourself ready. This is something that we are looking at. We've done it this time around for an absolutely magnificent cause. Whether it becomes a regular thing, it doesn't have to be played. So if somebody goes down, that's the problem. We don't have to do it. Do we want to do it if we're losing blokes? They're playing it with intensity, and because it's all the best versus the best, the intensity's even higher. It doesn't have to be played. That is the difference. So I just, if someone gets injured, someone's going to want to pull the plug.
The hard part is you have to put your hand up, because if you're Nat Fyfe or you're Patrick Dangerfield and you get asked, do you want to play, you kind of have to, don't you?
Really? I mean, particularly...
It's not you don't get the choice.
Particularly in this circumstance, when everyone's sort of saying we're all in.
Yeah.
It's hard to be the one who's going, no, fellas, I'm not in.
Yeah, so back in the old days, the fake hamstring, a few would pull out of the state games, but there's no fake hamstrings at the moment. Whether there would be ongoing if they had this as a three-yearly thing, that's the other issue. Take a break. More of your calls after it. 1300 736 736 is the number. Terry Wallace. Terry Wallace with me. Back to your calls as promised. 1300 736 736. Tom in Seaford. Welcome to you, Tom.
Oh, g'day, Dwayne. G'day, Terry. Love the show.
Hi, Tom.
Fellas, good to have a chat, quick chat about this. It's a pretty difficult issue because it's going to impact, I think, on a lot of parents if these terrible things occur. But, well, what I just wanted to say was I can see in the future these documents becoming even more and more legal that the players have to sign and to cover all parties. But what is critically important is that the insurance premiums that the players have health cover for life, especially if there is severe illnesses that happen to Polly Farmer. And I think it's really, you know, some people get through pretty unscathed, and you have other people that may, you know, have serious accident in one game. So there needs to be sensible medical cover if the worst happens, so these people are protected. They put the show on for us. They risk a life and limb, I suppose, out of all the sports. It's a fantastic sport. We'd hate to see it fade away and be killed off legally, but they do need proper medical coverage. What are your thoughts on that?
Tom, I think you make some valid points. I think your point about the fact that it is becoming so public now will have families of young kids sort of saying, well, do we go down that pathway or do we go down other pathways? I just think that that's a natural reaction that will happen. And it'll be fascinating to sort of see if it has any impact on our you know, junior ranks and people actually starting up the game. I hope not, but I mean, they could have been getting those injuries all these years over the decades of playing junior football as it is, but all of a sudden now it's become something that's become more aware. So it'll be interesting to see if that has any impact.
Text coming through, Tim Kelly's not playing, Nick Natanui not playing tonight. They would have been considered as being,
I think,
easy selections, wouldn't they?
I think Kelly was taken out almost day one because they sort of said they wanted his continuity with West Coast because he hadn't played with them. Natanui's was because, you know, he's
coming back from knees.
Just coming back from knees. Yep. So I think he was ruled out injury-wise.
Thanks for your text, Shane. Back to your calls. Russell in Reservoir. Welcome to you, Russell.
Oh, g'day there. I've been listening for weeks now about how all the commentators and how all the spectators were all hankering for this game to be like it used to be played, man on man, long kicking, plenty of goals. So is this game going to be a fans game or is it going to be a coach's game? That's what I'm interested in finding out. So if it turns out to be a fans game, why on earth can't we try and get back to the old game?
Russell, I think it'll be somewhere between the two. And I'm not trying to sit on the fence with that, but I think that what will happen is I don't think the coaches will overcoach. So I don't think it'll be a coach's game, but I think that the players are used to the way that they play now. Mm. They're not used to the way the game was played, you know, back when State of Origin was on back then. So their natural gravitation will be to get numbers around the ball, to get cover off as they would in their normal game. So I think it'll be more open, but not as open as some would like.
Thanks, Russell, for your call. Laurie in Burwood East. Welcome to you, Laurie.
Oh, thanks, gents, for taking my call. Look, I just agree somewhat with the question over Trent Cotchin being appointed as captain because I wouldn't have him as captain as my side. And the reason I say that is a bit of sour grapes that he walked around after Joe Watson relinquished his Brownlow, and in 12 months of that, he was cited three times by the match review committee, and our friend Sam Mitchell getting the packs was a sniper. And I can't have a captain that sets an example like that, so I don't see how he could actually be appointed coach captain of any side.
Well, he's been appointed captain of the side that's won two of the last three premierships and been the best side in the last 3 years, and they're very comfortable to have him in that role. I've worked with Trent, and look, we've had other players who have played right on the line at times, and it's a combative sport, so you're going to get some players that are, going to get themselves reported. He's a Brownlow medalist, so he's been perceived as being the right type of attitude and approach to the game to be able to be voted as a Brownlow medalist, which is the fairest and best. So I don't have any issue there. I'm in disagreement with you, Laurie, but we always appreciate your call.
Thanks, Laurie. Shane on the road. Hello, Shane.
How you going, gents?
Good.
Just want to find out what you guys think. I mean, the NRL have such a great history with their state of origin, you know, New South Wales versus Queensland. We used to have that with our state of origin footy. Why have we gone so far the other way, yet they always put up their premium players and their premium players want to play? And it's not just one game a year, it's three grueling games.
Well, the one thing that I would sort of say is, and I'm going back a fair way when I'm sort of saying this, but theirs originally was, you know, Queensland versus New South Wales, and it basically picked the Australian team at the end of that. And so there was still a real want to play to get yourself Australian representation along the way. Ours didn't have that on the end of it. And players, after they had represented their states a few times, knowing that they had to play the following week, were, and particularly the sides that were higher up the ladder, the team and the players were protective of their position on the ladder and started to, once they played a few times, started to drop out. So it just waned away from being the best against the best, and once it's not the best against the best, it doesn't work.
So that's why every 4 years might work, because players, when they get the opportunity to finally get a big V or get a South Australian jumper, they will put their hand up.
Absolutely. They want the jumper, but they don't necessarily want the jumper five times if it's going to impact their chances of playing finals.
Thanks for your call, Shane. Hey, before I let you go, Terry, we're going to talk some NBL shortly with Jeremy Lolliger, the Commissioner of the NBL, to explain exactly what has taken part in Tassie with the granting of the next NBL licence to the Tasmanian Consortium. What are you expecting out of the rest of the weekend's Marsh Community Series games? Giants and the Swans?
Well, they always, I mean, they don't take any prisoners, the two of them, but obviously six of the Giants' best players not being there. I would think that really the Swans, I don't think Giants bat as deep anymore as what they once did, so I would think that the Swans probably get hold of them.
Fremantle and Carlton, both Justin Longmuir, new coach, pretty keen to get a win, you would think, and get his game style better down. And Carlton's coach is not that old either. David Teague's only, what, 11 games old? So
correct.
You want to win.
I would think that that would be a game where there'd be a fair bit on the line. You know, we've spoken about sides who really want to win, get themselves sort of going. I think this weekend still, because of all the star players being out of action, we don't get quite as much out of this, but we do get a look at that next tier of player.
And in Wangaratta, Sunday, Richmond-Collingwood, the standalone Marsh Community Series game you're going to, Terry?
Yeah, well, I mean, it shows depth of the two sides, obviously, you know, how much depth that they've got. And I spoke at the start of it about you wanting to come away from Wangaratta finding a couple. And I think that will be the cause this time around. You know, can a Noah Bolter stand up? You know, who's going to be the one at Collingwood that sort of comes through and, you know, shows that they're ready to play senior footy?
Always great to have you in, Terry. Look forward to doing it on a regular basis on Fridays. Thanks for your time again.
Good on you, Dwayne.
Terry Wallace joining me.